Welcome to KABU, Ada Crandall, Calliope Ruskin, and Liam Castles.
Thank you for having us. It's great to be here.
Well, you're all organizers with the youth climate movement, and were part of the Portland Youth Climate Strike this past month, which was an incredibly vibrant day of creative events. One of the organizing ideas centered on targeting local villains in the climate emergency. The Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT, was among those villains. Well, let's start with why you targeted that agency and then how you're pursuing activism now and following through on that.
Yeah, so I think to a lot of people, the Oregon Department of Transportation would seem like an unlikely target for the youth climate movement. But people don't realize that 40% of our state's reported carbon emissions come from transportation. And those emissions aren't coming from things like people biking and walking, they're coming from freeway expansion, which is what ODOT continues to prioritize and is why they are a target of the climate movement here in Oregon.
We'll get into some of the proposed plans of ODOT, but let's first talk about another creative action of the youth that day, which centered on pledges signed by politicians to address the climate crisis. Can you say a bit about those pledges and how you and some of the other groups are holding politicians accountable?
Yes, the idea was to get politicians to make a commitment and a written commitment to an end to fossil fuel infrastructure expansion. And we had a bunch of politicians come and sign the pledge that day, and put their names on that document. And going forward, we hope to make that something that more and more politicians will sign on to and become part of and take to heart and truly use going forward. We're really just starting out when it comes to holding them accountable.
Yeah, we're all familiar with political pledges, aren't we? I could
yes.
line my walls with wallpaper yes. of politician pledges, but it's all about the follow-up. And I think the creative strategies that you're pursuing in not only creating a form of street theater out of the pledges, but also in the follow-up and how you recognize too the pressures politicians, even progressive politicians, are under as they try to fulfill those pledges. But let's first turn to the point you made about the ODOT plans for freeway expansion. As I understand, there are two proposals, right? And a series of plans that have unfolded. Calliope, can you address that at the plans?
Yeah, basically the main two that we're focusing on are the interstate bridge replacement, which is a joint work between, I believe, like the Vancouver and Washington government agencies and the Oregon and Portland governments. Yeah.
And then the other main project that we've been targeting is the Rose Quarter Freeway expansion, which is a proposal to add more lanes to I-5 that essentially would cut into the hillside that Harriet Tubman Middle School sits on and would increase pollution in the surrounding neighborhood. Those are the two that we've been most focused on, but they are just two of many, many proposed expansions around the state.
Now, the proposal around the Rose Quarter has a complicated history with different positions on it, including in leadership in the Black community. Can you help unpack some of that history and the competing claims and interests around the Rose Quarter plans?
Yeah, so the original construction of the Interstate 5 freeway cut through the historically Black Albina neighborhood and displaced thousands of residents. And the current plan includes, in addition to adding lanes, it includes capping the freeway, which would reconnect the two parts of the neighborhood that were previously divided. And that's something that community groups are really getting behind. And we, as climate advocates, fully support the caps. That's such an important step to reconnecting the neighborhood and to healing these historic harms that have been caused to Black communities in Portland. And we also know that it would be a much better project to do the caps without expanding the freeway, without increasing pollution.
So is this all one big package that's being pushed through, giving something for everybody as a strategy, or how does that work in your understanding of the politics of it?
For the I-5 Rose Quarter Freeway Expansion Project, yeah, or the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project?
The Rose Quarter Project.
My understanding is that ODOT is trying to put a lot of different pieces together to make this project happen. And they can't really do anything but try to give everyone something to try to make it work. And with both projects, frankly, that's really all they're doing, is they have this project that they really want to push through that is very obviously bad for the environment and goes against so many of the things that they often say are their principles. And to try to make it look good, they'll add on all the things that work for every different group, whether it's, you know, unions or the neighborhood or the city. As a whole, that doesn't actually fix the project. It just makes them look better politically, and makes it more likely that the project is going to get passed.
And what specifically is politically regressive, or from a climate perspective, regressive about each of those proposals?
For them in particular, or?
I understand that the problem you focused on is expansion of freeway and lanes on the freeways. Is that an issue in both of these, with both of these proposals, Calliope?
Yeah, it is. Basically, the way that freeway expansions work when contributing to climate emissions is because of something called induced demand, which is basically the idea, it's very similar to like economics, but basically it's the idea that more lanes, the more cars. So the more cars, the more pollution. And basically the more lanes you add, there will be more pollution, that it is entirely inevitable.
And that's been shown time and time again, whereas, you know, 5-10 years down the road, as soon as they add freeways, in Portland, in LA, in every city across the US and across the world, when you add more lanes, you get more cars later. That's just how it works.
Isn't one argument that is introduced to counter that people use a lot of, there's a lot of pollution from stalled cars that aren't moving through an area fast enough?
Yes, and the data points that ODOT is using to make that argument currently are based on a reality where induced demand doesn't exist. So at one point, they were actually saying that expanding the Rose Quarter Freeway would reduce emissions, but that's because they hadn't figured in induced demand. And the idea that expanding the freeway won't actually reduce congestion, which means that it won't actually reduce pollution, it will in fact increase pollution because there will be more vehicles driving.
There's another data point, what your baseline is, or your assumptions about transportation and the needs of the transportation sector, and what kind of vision of moving about in the world we adopt in the climate movement. Can any of you speak to that? What your vision of the alternative, an alternative progressive approach to transportation, and what we should demand of transportation agencies?
So to me, part of achieving climate justice is transforming our transportation system to not center cars and instead center people. So center moving people instead of moving vehicles, which means investing in biking and walking infrastructure and public transportation, things that will actually serve our communities instead of serving this status quo that tells us that we need to all be driving around in our polluting cars, because
whether electric or not.
Yeah. This idea that cars are a necessity has led us down a deadly path to climate destruction. And even when politicians make the point about like, oh, vehicles will be electric, like it's ultimately the same impact. It's still like car infrastructure and roads are destroying our cities, because even without the factor of the climate crisis, it's like we've created a world where it's hard in some places to even go outside because there's not like natural areas. There's giant roads and traffic. And that's not a world that people want to live in, and that's not a world that we want to leave for future generations.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to look at the history of transformations in the transportation sector. I remember when I was a little girl, Eisenhower proposed, and it was one of the big federal projects was putting in the I-5 highway system, which transformed the country. And I think it is not as though we have not had historical periods where massive resources have been invested in transforming the transportation system, the role of the airlines, and the massive subsidies of airports. So this is both a local issue, but is there also a broader vision of that that's part of the Green New Deal around how we should be transforming the transportation system?
I think so. I think that goes back to what Ada said about centering it all around people and moving people and not moving vehicles. And that, that applies to Portland, that applies to Oregon, that applies to the United States, and that applies to the world, right? Our priority should not be moving, 2 tons of metal per person on the road, because it's just so unbelievably inefficient. And if we can make it something that is public, that everyone can use, that is safe, that is equitable, then I think we have a really good chance of making our world better as a collective.
Before we close, I'd like to get back to this point we took up at the start of holding of the pledges, politicians making pledges and following through on those pledges. I know with the recent vote on these ODOT plans, the Commissioner Joanne Hardesty has been an important ally for progressives. Voted yes, but she added a caveat and saying it's limited to the environmental evaluation and preliminary engineering phase. In 2 years, the project will need to come back to City Council to make the case that ODOT has kept its promises and deserves to proceed to construction. So there's also pledge and promises there from ODOT. Does that make a difference in terms of how you weigh maybe a disappointment that Commissioner Hardesty voted to approve these projects, but how do you assess her vote on that?
I think it's really disappointing to see a leader like Commissioner Hardesty vote to move forward with the bridge replacement project, because she has absolutely been and still is a very strong ally of the youth climate movement. And I think there are a lot of very complicated politics all tied up in the interstate bridge replacement. And so I don't think it's a reason to like think, oh, Commissioner Hardesty is not a climate leader anymore. But I think looking at it at this broader picture of all of the many, many regional elected leaders who voted this past week or the week that we're recording this to support moving forward with the current project, a lot of them said that thing about like, oh, this is just the first step and there will be other opportunities to critique things in the future. And like, to me, that's an excuse. That's a sort of like, we're putting it off until later and we're not going to deal with it right now. When in reality, like this vote could have been those regional government entities' best chance to do what is right and to stop this project from being a freeway expansion. And in voting to move it forward, they have let us down.
Yeah, for the interstate bridge replacement, the recent vote at City Council, which me and Ada attended, basically every elected official expressed some form of concern about the project, whether about the height of it or the amount of lanes or the impact on the environment or public transportation. Yet all of them continued to vote yes. And one thing that Ada says a lot is in reference to like is an analogy to high school, which is like kind of following the status quo and listening to the bigger, more popular governmental agencies instead of really being true to what is right and what will help us in the future. And that just something that just sticks with me is our elected officials really aren't fighting for what is right, and they are really just following the status quo.
Tying it back a little bit to the recent vote with the interstate bridge replacement, I think that the fact that the vast majority, like every single elected official except for one, voted to move forward with the project but expressed concern is to me basically them saying, we know this project is bad. We've heard your testimony and we understand it's bad, but we don't have the courage to stand up against it. And so I think that that can be seen a couple of different ways. It's like, we need people in power who are brave enough to fight the status quo, but it also means that they have it in their heads that maybe what is happening is wrong. And so we know that even if our leaders don't have the courage, organizers have the courage to really fight to make our leaders understand that they need to stand up for us. And so in the next few months, it's really going to be about showing the people in power that people, that our communities care about these issues and that we need them to take action. And so we encourage you, anyone who's listening, to show up with us. Youth from Sunrise have been protesting these freeway expansion projects every other week for over a year. You can follow us on social media at Youth versus ODOT or find us on the Sunrise PDX website for information.
Liam, do you want to conclude with a thought or two about what sustains you and what you see ahead?
I think for me, organizing around freeways is one of those things I didn't expect to be doing even just a year ago. Because it's not, it really, you know, I was saying this earlier, it's really not something that people connect with climate change. And I want to be part of the movement that is changing that dialogue, where we can really see and look at the facts, like where are our emissions coming from and what can we do about it right now? And as Ada and Calliope were saying, you know, if our leaders can't stand up, or as you said, right, we're going to get in their faces. And beyond that, as a friend of mine who's on that group said a few months ago, right, we're getting older and we're about to be at the age where we can get elected. And if they can't stand up to if politicians can't stand up to, you know, to the bully agency, then we're going to take their places.
I certainly hope to have you on the show again. There are developmental aspects of life as people mature and enter adulthood, but there are developmental aspects of social movements too. And I think how we sustain a struggle and deepen and expand it over time is something we're interested in following on the Old Mole. So we hope to have you all back again and we'll see you soon. Thanks so much, including for being with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.